for gender identity. The newspaper also says the letter contains an implicit threat that schools could lose funding if they don't comply. I'm Anthony Lucero.
Retail sales figures are a lot better than industry analysts expected. Figures out today from the Commerce Department show retail sales jumped 1.3% in April. That's nearly a half a percent higher than experts were forecasting. This is USA Radio News.
Hello, I'm Eric, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale President Larry Arn on progressivism's appeal and danger.
Progressivism has been powerful for two kinds of reasons. First of all, its promise is a very high promise. It claims that it can put everything right. And the second thing is, it draws on modern science for a lot of its authority, and modern science is very powerful. Modern science cured polio. Modern science put a man on the moon. The question is, what do you do with the power? If you give absolute power or excessive power to a bunch of people, over time, they're very likely to abuse it. Remember, the richest country in the history of man in peacetime has assembled a debt larger than any in history. And it is getting to the place now where it's not going to be able to afford to go on.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Shell Oil says more than 2,000 barrels of crude oil have spilled into the Gulf of Mexico. Shell says it's isolated the location of the leak and shut down production at the site. The leak discovered by a company helicopter. The spill is located about 100 miles off the coast of Louisiana. Bidding in an online auction for the gun former Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman used to kill Trayvon Martin appears to have been hijacked by fake accounts posting astronomically high bids. At one point early today, the bidding surpassed $65 million. Congress is approving burial at Arlington National Cemetery for women who served as military pilots in World War II. Sponsored by Arizona Congresswoman Martha McSally, the bill would apply to women who flew transport and training missions as women Air Force service pilots, or WASPs. McSally, an Air Force veteran, the first woman to fly combat missions, about 100 WASP veterans are still living. This is USA Radio News.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman. Something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right. But don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your...
Pressure is mounting on Bernie Sanders to end his campaign for president, with Democratic Party leaders raising alarms that his continued presence in the race is undermining efforts to beat presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump this fall. The new concerns come after Sanders' recent wins over frontrunner Hillary Clinton in Indiana and West Virginia. While those victories do give Sanders momentum heading into next week's primaries in Kentucky and Oregon, they did almost nothing to help Sanders cut into Clinton's nearly insurmountable lead in the delegates who will decide their party's nomination. And Donald Trump says he tries to pay as little in taxes as possible because he thinks the government is just going to waste his money anyway. Trump with George Stephanopoulos on ABC's Good Morning America.
Because frankly, our country doesn't know what they're doing with our money or our tax money, and that's part of the problem. So I fight very hard to pay as little tax as possible.
What is your tax rate?
It's none of your business. You'll see it when I release.
Trump says he's not going to publicly release his tax returns as long as they are being audited by the IRS. An audit doesn't preclude someone from releasing their tax returns, but Trump says he's still going to wait. Trump is dismissing Clinton's calls to release his returns as hypocritical when she's not releasing the transcripts of her speeches to Wall Street firms like Goldman Sachs. This is USA Radio News. I'm Susan King.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, we're back, and it's the sports guys, and I know I have to talk about the weather, but Bill, I don't think you're going to be going to your boat tomorrow.
Actually,
it's another day of rain.
You're kidding.
Nope.
It's Friday. It's raining. It must be the weekend.
If it's Friday and raining, it must be the weekend. I heard that we're going to see a break in the weather.
Well,
we're only going to see afternoon storms, Pat.
Well, they said chance of showers and thunderstorms between 4 and 5 p.m. Patchy clouds in the morning, which is really, you know, patchy fog. Not patchy clouds. Patchy fog in the morning, which can be very dangerous in Hunterdon County. Saturday night, about a 60% chance of showers. And Sunday, slight chance of showers. So if you're going to go to the boat, looks like the day to do it is Sunday. And, of course, if you can take off Monday, guess what? Monday's going to be
sunny. Oh, Monday will be perfect, right? Perfect.
Monday's going to be sunny.
Yep.
Well, you know what I think we ought to do? I think we ought to move the work week. And we'll take Mondays and Tuesdays off.
Well, you know, you're self-employed. You can do that. I don't think John's firm would like it although he works Saturdays and Sundays anyway. They like it when he works 7 days a week. But, you know, it is funny for those of us who basically are self-employed how seldom we take off.
That's it.
It is amazing.
Because, that's right.
You know, we always have what I call the tyranny of the timesheet. And,
no, I don't think that's it as much as we just, and the payroll, you know, work.
Well, you don't know. You still deal with a payroll ogre, too.
Well, that's true.
Tell me about it.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
true.
It is sometimes shocking just how much of an ogre it is.
Well, let's talk sports, guys. I mean, we're going to play some commercials, but we'll wait. I don't like this next commercial, so I hate to play it.
Okay, well, I can tell you the Washington Capitals have once again gone down in flames.
Unbelievable.
To the Pittsburgh Penguins after winning the President's Cup, being the best team in hockey for 82 games.
And struggling to oust the Flyers.
Exactly. My Flyers gave them...
I mean, they were up 3 games to none. I'll give them that. But still, they lost that game 6.
Oh, anything could have happened. And, you know,
why don't you tell people that really don't know you're talking hockey?
Oh, we are
talking
hockey.
I guess, you know, there might be some people out there that don't know the Washington Capitals are not a baseball team.
They're a hockey team. Pat.
And the Penguins, if somebody doesn't realize that the Penguins are a hockey team, I guess they better go back to second grade, right?
Right. That's
well, the Penguins aren't exactly
well
Yankees or the Red Sox
or
a team like that.
Would you really?
I mean, they're pretty well known.
I don't mean that. I meant, would you equate Penguins with swimming or diving or baseball? No, I think most people would say ice skating, skiing,
yes,
hockey.
Somebody might play, say Penguin and Batman.
Oh, there you go. Good and evil.
Good and evil. There you are. Well, the Pittsburgh Penguins managed to oust Washington, and the amazing thing was the scoring that they didn't get from Malkin, who was hurt.
And who was a top scorer.
Right, top scorer. And Sidney Crosby, their best player, who had 2 assists and no goals in 6 games. So all the scoring was from...
But you know, Bill, that happens so much. How often do you see, like, a great baseball team, they get to the playoffs or maybe a World Series, and their big slugger basically has no home runs and maybe a few hits, whatever, because they pitched around them.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
That team won, just like in hockey, they were probably shadowing Crosby and Malkin, and they're not going to let them beat you with those guys. But the thing is, great teams have good depth, so they have other players step up.
Oh, that's absolutely true. The other thing I noticed was that Pittsburgh did to Washington what Washington did to Philly. They managed to clog the slot, make Washington take low percentage perimeter area shots, and allow their goaltender, Murray, to get very good looks. Now, Murray's a rookie. He played at Scranton Wilkes-Barre last year, and they only brought him up in December or January when Marc-Andre Fleury was hurt. And he seems to have carried the team beautifully since he came up. Now, I will tell you that I was very surprised at how they neutralized Ovechkin and how they managed to make the Pittsburgh defense look like Swiss cheese on a number of occasions. The Capitals also had a real reluctance to go to the net and score the dirty goals.
Yeah, and again, sometimes the tough, gritty team with good depth will prevail in a series where, on paper, Washington really looked like the better team, Bill.
And remember, Pittsburgh was not doing well early in the season.
Oh, yeah.
In November, they changed coaches.
Yeah, they were a 500 team most of the year.
Exactly. They changed the entire coaching staff. Now, I'm not a Pittsburgh Penguin fan. I'm a Flyers fan, so usually I like to see the Pens lose, but... if there's a team I dislike more than the Pens, it's the Washington Capitals.
But, you know, that's an interesting thing. And, Pat, you can distinguish here between, I think, hockey and baseball versus football and basketball. I mean, let's face it, in the NFL, if you get off to a bad start, let's say you're 1-4 or even, you know, 3-5, something like that, it's very unlikely you're going to make it back and get to the playoffs. Whereas in these other sports, like Bill was just saying, Pittsburgh was, you know, basically a 500 team, changed coaches in January and then took off the last half of the year, and now they're in the conference finals. Well, you also see that in baseball because the season's long enough.
In football, game is more important, as Pat has pointed out frequently here. Hockey should really only be a 40 or 50-game season.
Oh, God, when they did that a couple of years ago, it was 42 great. Games. Yeah. Every game was sold out because it meant twice as much. Instead of 80 games, you were playing 40. It was wonderful.
And it started late. Later in the year,
exactly.
So all of the football nuts could finish
yep.
football before
yep.
they had to start thinking about the next sport.
I mean, very bluntly, nobody cares about
October hockey.
October or November when the Pittsburgh Penguins are hosting the Edmonton Oilers. You know, because nobody really has...
Well, it has no real significance because
exactly.
of what Pat just stated.
Yeah, it's only
season's
too
long.
It's 2 points.
I mean, you can make the same argument, I think less so, but it's similar in baseball, April baseball, who cares about it? But what they're smart because they have rivalry games in April.
Right.
Exactly.
Then
right.
you care.
I mean, well, I can't imagine anybody interested in... the Red Sox and the Yankees, can you?
Oh,
the six games they just concluded in the last 10 days were unbelievable games.
Well, they were all good games. I mean, the Yankees
if they're rotten games.
Four, but they won 3 in New York.
Well, it was 3-2. They lost three up north. They took 2 out of 3, so they lost 4 out of 6. But the games were good, and they were rivalry games.
Exactly.
So people are going to care.
And remember, early in the season, people are hungry for opening day, and they're hungry for baseball. I find myself missing football by about the end of June. I don't know about you.
By June, then you say, oh, training camps are going to open in a couple of weeks, and you start getting into football.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. There was a draft recently, and I think most of us
started
with that.
They said the NFL true. Draft had higher ratings, the draft, than the NHL playoffs.
I'm not surprised.
Wow, really?
Yeah, the
I'm
draft.
Not surprised.
Wow.
That's how starved people are for football.
And how fanatic. And I think what it does is, remember, I'm not a real – I don't really follow – I follow Wisconsin, but other college football I don't really follow. But there are a lot of people out there that follow college and are really interested in where those kids are going to play. In fact, a lot of people are much more interested in college football than in professional football.
Absolutely.
But they're also watching. So all of us who really want to see who our teams are going to get in the draft, we're watching. And all of the people who want to follow these kids that they've been following for 4 years, 3 or 4 years in college, are watching. So, it's become such a spectacle. I mean,
they do
really
it well.
They did a great job in Chicago the last couple of years. They really have.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting, and they had the camera on the outside, when a team was getting ready to pick, when they were on the clock, they turned all the lights on the water fountains to the color of that team.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Really cool. And they kept showing, you know, the shots of the outside, you know. And so I think they started with yellowish colors the Rams picked, and then it turned to putrid green when the Eagles picked, and went on and on from there.
And the only problem, apparently, this year, the weather in Chicago was just as crummy as it was around here. So couldn't have been fun standing outside to, you know, watch some of that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because football becomes more and more of a spectacle all the time, particularly with the NFL. And I happen to enjoy spectacle and hoopla, and I just love watching how skilled the PR machine of the National Football League is. You know, down to the coloring the fountains.
Yeah,
when the team was drafted,
exactly.
It reminds me of ancient Rome.
It reminds bread and circuses, circuses in football.
And it reminds me also of some of the movies, Italian movies Fellini made. Now I'm a big foreign film buff, but Fellini loved spectacle, and he loved to put hundreds of people into movies. And so did Cecil B. DeMille.
Some of the scenes, you had hundreds of people. Yeah. You had the battles and so forth. Yeah.
But also,
and we have a lot of that drama to football. And I think football is a sport that lends itself to drama.
Yes.
Well, and also now talking about some of these young players, for example, Kenny Clark, who was the first round draft choice when Packers had number 27. You know, when he played, he's coming. Dayton Jones played. They played, you know, they both played in the same team. But the human interest stories, I mean, this kid, you know, his mother had to be really incredible because he was 9 years old when his father was incarcerated for second degree murder. He has a minimum sentence of 55 years. One of the first people he talked to, however, after the draft was his dad. So,
wow.
I mean, you know, you get, and especially Green Bay, I mean, this story, I mean, if this kid makes it, and he'll have a tremendous amount of support. But you hear so often so many of those stories about how these kids have really overcome a lot of adversity. And, of course, it doesn't hurt that he had 75 tackles during his final season with UCLA, and of course, you know, the Packers are really putting a lot of hopes in him. Big kid. I saw a video of him, and you know, it was a very, you know, kind of the kid that sounded like he would fit in with the Packers. Not one of those brash, you know, I'm going to do it all, but you know, I'm here to learn, to work, etc. And I think there's so many of those stories that, again, you're right, the NFL, they keep putting out these stories, the local teams keep putting out these stories, because there's, you know, there's human interest, and now it's not just that somebody is a defensive tackle, it's, you know, who is this kid, where is he from? I mean, it's interesting, UCLA going to Green Bay, but this is a kid who sounds like, you know, hopefully he'll fit in well, and hopefully he'll do what we need him to do for the Packers. So there's so many of those stories. And
well, Pat, I know we have to go to some breaks, but when we come back, Bill would like to pick up the baseball thing, the surprising fighting Phils, and some of the changes that are going on in baseball that are really amazing. Some of the teams like the Astros, who were a very hot team last year, have just gone right in the tank.
Okay, well, we'll do that, and thanks for reminding me. We'll be back after a few spots from our sponsors. I don't think we need any more news. I mean, I'm kind of trumped out, so let's be back in a minute.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, we're back with the sports guys. I'm Pat Smith, joined today by John Manfreda and Bill Wolfson. And Bill, I heard you wanted to talk about one of my least favorite sports, baseball.
Oh, and the Fightin' Phillies. Well, the Fightin' Phillies have finally gotten to 20 wins. This is the earliest in years that they've gotten to 20 wins. They're now 20 and, I believe, 11. The real surprise in the National League East. The Phillies have been on the road more than any other team so far this year. So now they're coming home to Philadelphia where they start a series tonight, I think, with Atlanta. Let me check. And the Phils are getting good pitching. They're getting timely hitting. They sound like cliches, but they've had a great road trip, and they managed to win against the Braves last night, 7-4.
And where did they play?
In Atlanta. So okay. They're home tonight, and I think they actually host the Braves tonight. I'm not sure. But, you know, there's some guys to watch, and they're getting better all the time. They're a team that is young. You know, they still have a few of the older veterans. Ryan Howard is still a Philly, although I think this is probably going to be his last year because his contract is up and he's just not coming back. We may find him DHing someplace in the American League where he catches on, but... Phils have gotten some decent relief pitching. Their front-line pitching, young as it is managing to hold up. But again, it's only May 13th.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has any preconceived notion that this team is actually going to contend for a championship or even a division title.
Well, they could be a wild card team. They have to get
and with the Mets and Nationals,
the Nats in there.
I don't see that happening.
The Phillies' biggest problem is that they've got the Mets, who are I think going to run away with it, and they've got the Nats, an excellent team.
I don't see the Mets running away with anything, Bill. I think you're going to see more and more problems with those arms. Harvey's not right. Now you're starting to see the abrasive nature. I mean, why they didn't unload him in the offseason is beyond me. I think the Mets were greedy about it. They still think they can hold this guy out and get a boatload of players and picks for him. Not going to happen. Everybody knows what Matt Harvey is. He's a jerk. He's got a lot of talent, but he's damaged goods. I think they held him too long.
You think Matt Harvey's a toxic guy in the locker
room? Absolutely. He's very selfish. Look what he did in the World Series. He insisted on going back in. To me, I think he's worth a lot less than they think he's worth. Plus, with the salary he's going to have to pay him, I mean, I just don't see it.
Let me ask you guys something, because, of course, in football, one of the real question marks at the beginning of the season and even after the first few games is the injuries. Are some of the teams, do you see some of the teams with more stamina? Because, you know, that baseball season is so long.
It's a prime example in the Angels, okay? The Yankees, no, isn't as good an example. The Yankees just aren't that good. They're old, and they're just not that good. The Angels have Mike Trout and a boatload of talent, but they lost three starting pitchers and a shortstop, okay? And, you know, Trout's having his usual MVP type year, but I mean, you lose three starting pitchers and a shortstop and a couple other Knicks here and there, you know, banged up players. I mean, they are sub 500, and again, a team that was picked to run away with it in the West isn't even close.
Well, that's always a problem, too. Look at the Yankees. Ellsbury's hurt. Now, granted, the Yankees
But again, Ellsbury's, when he got him from the Red Sox 3 years ago, we said, fine, you take it for $150 million. We knew he hadn't played. He hadn't played a full season for the Red Sox for several years.
That's right.
Okay? Ellsbury's one of those players that is more valuable on certain teams than others with his speed and defensive ability. The Red Sox had, you know, Mookie Betts coming up and Jackie Bradley. They were going to push him out anyway. It was the perfect time. The Yankees took that bait because they really needed an outfielder, but he's never going to – you're lucky if you're going to get 120 games with Ellsbury.
We'll remember something.
And then you got Beltran. He's another, you know, senior guy.
Beltran is 38. A-Rod is 41.
I mean, they're just an old team. Well, and how about
Teixeira?
And Teixeira, he's been so bad. Great player. You have to love him. But he's all banged up.
Remember, he's so banged up.
He's so banged up.
He's always hurt.
I mean, you know. And
hurt the Yankees. Remember, the Yankees had a terrible April. They're suddenly waking up and playing.
Well, they're hitting, but look who they're playing, too. They're playing Minnesota, Kansas City. We're having a bad year. They're the world champions. But, again, Kansas City and Houston, who were two of the best teams in the AL last year, are both, like, because of the injuries and the starting pitching, pitchers aren't necessarily injured on the Royals. They're just on the Astros. They're just having a bad spring.
They're having a bad spring.
Yeah.
And you know,
but Pat is right. Bad spring, you can still come back in August, September, and be there at the end.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, how many times have you seen teams get caught? Well, let me give you the classic example. My fight in Phillies, 1964. I was a Cub Scout. I went to 14.
12 games up with 15 to play.
And they give it away to the Cardinals. Gene Mauk almost stuck his head in the oven.
Yep.
You had guys.
That is the always cited along with the 78 Red Sox.
Oh, as a big collapse.
The difference is the Red Sox started to fade in August.
Yeah.
The Phillies faded the last 2 weeks of the year.
Well, remember, the Phillies always mess with their fans' head.
Yeah.
The Red Sox, you expect disappointment.
Yeah, yeah.
You're mature grown-ups.
Yeah, there you go. Back in those days, you knew something was going to go wrong.
Yeah. You had people like Art Mahaffey who were pitching for the Phillies. He had already won 18 games. He was 18-6 going into the first week in September. And really on track to win 25 games.
Cause he unbelievable.
Four or five more times.
Yep.
Maybe eight more times. And the Mets came into town. Now, remember, this was 1964.
Third year of the Mets, you know, miserable existence.
Their manager was Casey Stengel, who once asked famously, is there anybody here who can really play this game? Their first baseman was Marvelous Marv Thornberry, who when a pop fly was hit to him behind second base, somebody yelled, Marv, wait, we'll get the key to your handcuffs. He was terrible. And they had.
And you remember who the third baseman was?
Oh, it was Don Zimmer.
None other than Don the Meathead Zimmer.
And you had first year for Clarence Choo Choo Coleman, their catcher.
Yep.
One of my favorite Mets, who was a real character. But more importantly, you had the Mets come in and they won 3 out of 4. And that was
Mets probably hadn't taken 3 out of 4 in a series the entire year.
The Mets probably hadn't even read about winning 3 out of 4 in the newspaper when they opened the New York Post or the Daily News and were reading about the Yankees.
Right.
They were terrible. That was the year that the Phils had Richie Ashburn in center field, and he was having a wonderful year. He was batting .320, and by the end of the season, he was down to .280. So you just had a complete collapse. So if you want to talk about great failures in sports, that was one of them. But, you know, the 78 Red Sox and the Bucky Dent home run and the kid in the stands who touched the ball, I've always said to myself that would make a great sports movie around that kid.
If you remember...
I don't remember, so tell me the story.
Go ahead, John.
Well, the kid I'm thinking about, I don't know about that, the 78, but the one I'm thinking about was the series with the Baltimore Orioles back in 2000. Was that the 2009 series, maybe, because they won it in 09? I think
they won in 09.
Yeah, they won in 09, and they didn't win. They stole it, but No, but I mean that was the year they had. There were three outstanding free agents: CC Sabathia, Mark Teixeira, and Alex Rodriguez.
And they signed all three.
They spent $500 million. I mean, that was the commissioner's office should have stepped in on that. But having said that, to me, I will always put an asterisk on that one. But having said that, and by the way, I called the Fan this week to argue, but they were talking about David Ortiz after his two home runs Sunday night and how he destroys the Yankees, blah, 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 and they were talking about drug testing. So I called in and protested, and boy, did they hand me my head. I would never do that to a caller of this show. Well, I said I thought it was there was 2 points. One, it was ridiculous that the Monday after the weekend, in the previous 8 days, David Ortiz had hit 5 home runs against the Yankees. And they're trashing him on that Monday morning, okay?
Whoa.
They were trashing him, saying, well, you know, he tested negatively for steroid PEDs, blah, blah, blah. So I called up and I said, look, the guy's had a phenomenal career and he's finishing up. This is his last go-round, and you're talking about a radio station that broadcasts a team who has the worst offender of all time for PEDs. And now you're talking about David Ortiz, and they absolutely went off. Just, boy, did I touch a nerve. The other thing was they were questioning whether they should do anything at Yankee Stadium for David Ortiz. Well, Yankee fans wouldn't want this. So I called up and said, wait a minute. Just 2 or 3 years ago, did you see what they did for Jeter? Did you see what they did for Mariano in Fenway Park? Now, granted, most Red Sox fans were saying, yeah, get the hell out of here. You know, we'll pay your plane to anywhere you want to go, but just don't come back here. I mean, I get that. But they paid him the respect. And now you got these two clowns on WFAN saying that the Yankees should not recognize David Ortiz at all. Yeah, but that speaks for itself. Getting back to your point, Pat.
No, John, that's foolish. Let me tell you why it is foolish.
Let's get Bill's question.
What's that?
Well, it's foolish not to do that. From a PR point of view, missing that opportunity, you're putting fannies in the seats, and they're going to be buying hot dogs.
Well, you know what it is, Bill, though? They know it's going to be sold out anyway. The Red Sox are in. It's going to sell out anyway. So it's not about fannies in the seats. But I agree with you. It's the professionalism or lack thereof. Why would you even consider not honoring him?
They're not a good team this year.
Give him his due. Give him his due. Exactly. Give him his due.
So why are they saying no? Why are they saying no?
Because it's New York. What can I tell you? There is no watch. You got to remember something. When Jeter retired 2 years ago and they honored him at Fenway, the Red Sox, although were the reigning world champions, were in dead last place. All right? The worst year they had in 40 years, record-wise. And they honored Derek Jeter. Okay? Come on. If you're having a bad year like that, the last thing you want to do is recognize you know, your major foe's best player, and they did it. And then the following year, they were in last place again. The last 2 years, they honored Mariano. So, I mean, you know, they were in the worst position to want to, you know, bestow any compliments on the other side at that time. And now you've got these guys coming fresh off a bashing where the Yankees got really beat up bad the last 8 days. So, you know, they did win the two, although one of the worst calls ever was that Friday night game in the ninth inning. Bases are loaded. There's a 3-1 count on David Ortiz. The ball is 6 inches off the plate from Andrew Miller, and the umpire called it a strike, and everybody went nuts. You know, Ortiz went crazy. John came out of the dugout, the whole thing. They finally restore order, right? Andrew Miller throws the 3-2 pitch almost in the dirt, and they call that a strike. It wasn't one, it was two. It was clearly they didn't want him to walk in and run, so much so that they actually, I mean, that to me was as clear. That's I'd like outrageous. To check this umpire's bank account.
Yeah.
And, okay, because there were not one, two pitchers in a row on a 3-1 count that were clearly out of the strike zone. Anyway, Red Sox fans were in just, oh my God, you can't begin to understand. I mean, the internet was crazy with that.
But even, you know, any
even non-Red Sox fan, that was totally,
you know,
wrong.
And that's the point. Any fan should be.
Yeah. You're outraged because,
you know,
of the
like
bad
it,
umpiring.
Do I like it if there are bad calls against the Packers? No. But do I like it if there are bad calls against the other team?
Well, how
no,
about
I
what
really
was
don't.
It the most famous game when they used the substitute refs, the Seattle game?
Oh, my gosh.
That cost the Packers a – well, it cost them a division championship.
It did. It cost them a division.
Cost them a division championship.
And you know what? If that had been the reverse against Seattle, I still would have been upset.
Exactly right. Yeah, because you're fair-minded.
And any good fans would be.
But you
know,
have been that upset. Look –
I would have been.
But I've got
larceny
in my heart.
No, I would have been.
One of my teams,
okay.
I'm happy.
Bill's being honest here.
All the way to the bank.
But you also have to, guys, you also have to think, look how many Packer fans, I mean, really hated Brett Favre because of
that's
what
true.
Did.
That's
and
true.
Yet, you know, did it take a little while?
That's true.
Was he a little bit afraid to come back? Did he think he needed, Bart Starr to be there with him? But the fact is, the fans did what they needed to do, and it's just like we could equate it to politics. I'll bet you that somehow they're going to be nicey-nice made, with the Donald and the other Republicans. So, I mean, you're right. For fans to do that, or especially for what you said, the DJs on the fan were the ones who were being so critical.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you were saying?
Right. Yes, and when I called in to on both of those points to protest, they flushed me down the toilet. It was terrible. Joe and Evan, who was my two favorite guys on the radio, absolutely totally disappointed me. But anyway, back to the story of the kid in the stands that Bill mentioned. I think it was 2009, but maybe it was earlier. Maybe it was the 2003 team or something like that. There's a fly ball to the outfield that the Oriole right fielder had his glove up and was about to catch it. And a kid, and I just don't remember his name now, you may remember it, Bill, literally reached over and caught the ball before the Oriole outfield. He put his glove on top of the Oriole outfielder's glove, snagged it in, and they called it a home run without calling fan interference, and he should have been out. Well, anyway, the Yankees, the next day, the kid was from somewhere down, like Neptune, somewhere down the shore, not close to New York at all. The Yankees proceeded to give the kid tickets for all the remaining playoff games and to chauffeur him, sent a car down to get him to bring him to Yankee Stadium for the rest of that series. And then I had heard in the offseason, they gave the kid a season ticket for the next year.
Well, that's a great story.
Well, you know, I mean, there's something to be said for bad umpiring, I guess, but, you know, that was a bit over the top. That is usually cited as one of the most blatant examples of just, you know, not even ineptitude, just pure blundering on the part of the umpires. Because the ball was still in the field of play.
The kid
actually reached into the field of play, caught the ball because he was sitting, you know, higher than the field. And so the Oriole outfielder was starting to close his glove as if he was catching it. And he's looking at his glove. Where's the ball? He didn't know what happened to the ball. He didn't realize that the kid was on top of him and caught it above him. It was
but
unbelievable.
That should have been clearly a call of
the Orioles went nuts clearly. With that. They all stormed the field. They were going. They had to restrain them. Oh, it was unbelievable.
I'm surprised the kid got out of the stands.
Oh, he became a celebrity. They actually had him on WFAN.
Well, and today
to talk about his catch.
And
it was kind of an amazing catch. And you could see where a kid would have done that. I mean, it just
absolutely. He thought the ball was coming in. He just leaned in and he didn't realize, or maybe he did, realize that he was leaning into the field of play and stuck his arm out. He was probably 3 feet in the field of play. And the Oreo outfielder was, you know, kind of leaning against the wall about to jump up to get it, and the kid catches it. I mean, it is a classic. Of course, I almost put my foot through the TV screen. Not that I'm a big Zeros fan, but I would have preferred to see the O's win than the Yankees.
Well, you know, the Orioles.
And by the way, I think Bill absolutely teased me about that for months after that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's absolutely true.
Bill would never miss that up. In fact, he may still mention it again before this baseball season is over.
I probably mentioned it again before
The show is over, Bill.
What's the 1978 story, Bill?
Oh, well, the Yankees are playing a Red
Sox. We don't really have to revisit old bad day history, do we?
No, Pat is a very good family law attorney. She has seen.
She's sitting there. That's
over
right.
And over. And
that's
over.
Right. Right. She's sitting there with that Cheshire cat, like a classic family law lawyer. Throws a little question out there, knowing it's going to cause domestic discord.
And remember, there's nothing more that drives a divorce business than spouses tearing open those old wounds.
There you go.
Right.
We're old friends. One That's who's a Phillies fan and one who's a Red Sox fan, you know, trying to talk sports.
Well, the thing with the Red Sox, as Bill well knows, is given the last 11 years, we can talk a little bit better after the last 11 years than we could the previous 86 years. Well, so it's a little bit different for Red Sox fans now.
Well, you know what happened? It's 1978. The Yankees and the Red Sox are tied. This is the one-game playoff to see who goes to the World Series or to the division, next round of the division. Bucky Dent is up, a guy who never hits a home run. Bucky Dent puts a ball down the left field line. The Red Sox outfielder, I forget who it is running for the ball.
A guy named Jim Rice.
And this young man, about 12 or 13, reaches out with his baseball glove that he had brought. And right at the wall, he grabs the ball before it lands in the Red Sox left fielder's glove. Now, the Yankee Stadium goes nuts. It's a home run. Bucky Dent. And there are a couple guys on.
As they refer to him in Boston as Bucky Blanking Dent.
Yes. And, you know, the kid was some kid from, like, Yonkers or Westchester. And he was terrified of all the fuss. And he turns to his father and says, "I'm in trouble." And everybody around him says, "No, you're not." The Yankees practically gave him a parade. In fact, when the Yankees won the pennant that year, that young man was on one of the parade floats.
Because he would have been, the point is, he would have been out. Rice would have caught the ball and he would have been out.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then he followed up, and the home run, you know, you see it replayed every once in a while, the Bucky Dent homer. It was one of the shortest home runs in history. It just barely caught the top of the old green monster before the monster seats that are there now were there. It made it by 6 inches, or it would have just been a hit off the wall. And it was a 3-run homer.
But, you know, I love stories like that because, you know, they say baseball is a game of inches, and it's
true. Yeah,
really
that's
is.
True. That's
and
true.
Just like you say baseball is a game of failure, where else can you succeed 3 times out of 10 and make $1 million?
And be good. Or fail 7 out of 10 times and be deemed to be good.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely amazing. That's why I love baseball so much. There's so many twists to the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And people don't understand. They think it's a boring game. There are a bunch of guys standing around waiting for somebody to hit the ball. And to me, it's all drama and strategy and the fans.
Well, I think that's the point. I think most people who are not fans don't understand the strategy. No. They really don't. And then, and that's, you know, they do think it's just somebody getting up and somebody throwing a ball and hitting it or missing it.
People who come here from other countries where baseball is not a major sport, let's say from Germany or England, they find the game incomprehensible.
Well, although, you know, I don't know about Germany, but certainly you know why there's so many good young players that come from the Dominican Republic, don't you?
Oh, they have baseball camps all over the Dominican
yeah.
Republic.
But you know why that started, and you know why baseball is so popular in Japan?
Well, I know that baseball is popular in Japan because they wanted to emulate the West, and also because during the 20s, Babe Ruth and company would all barnstorm there.
Actually, I think that probably the real reason is that we had bases both in Japan, and of course we had a big base down in the Dominican Republic. So if you really look, most places where there have been American Army or Air Force bases, because the American guys play baseball, baseball has caught on in that country. And that certainly happened in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, no,
I mean, now they
it.
Have all of the baseball camps, etc. But that's how the kids started playing baseball. And so we exported baseball, not to England, but to some of these other countries where we had a lot of bases.
I always thought it was fun to go to sporting events in foreign countries. And I've been to baseball games in Mexico, and I've been to a baseball game, and strangely enough, the Cayman Islands, where they play a great deal, but there are a lot of Cuban people that come there to work. And I've been to baseball games in the U.S. Virgin Islands. None of it, obviously, is major league or even high minor league, but it's fun. And you
now, see, I'd rather go to, in Latin America, go to soccer games, which are just
take your wife in your hands when you go to a soccer game.
You do.
You do.
I never did get used to bullfights. And I've yet to watch a cricket match, and I don't know how anybody could watch a cricket match. But
I will have to agree with you. I went to a cricket match in Bermuda with my wife, and I also went to a cricket match in I've got to think of where this was, someplace outside London, I think in Oxford. And, you know, it is more of a social event where you sit around and you eat and drink, and occasionally something happens on the field and everybody applauds. But in places like India, where cricket has been exported by the British, they are wildly passionate about cricket. Now, to me, cricket's like watching paint dry.
Yeah, but so much of it deals with culture, all right? And of course, we're such a melting pot that we support how many sports here? But, I mean, you it transcends a little bit. For example, just to contrast this a little bit, the only country, and as you guys know, I'm a tournament chess player, the only country in the world that has ever been captivated by the game is Russia. The Russians have had the majority. In the 20th century, it was all Russian. In the 20th century, there were 30 million registered tournament players in the Soviet Union. And when they used to have the USSR championship, the entire country, 200 million people was listening on. They broadcast the games on radio, and they're listening. Okay, and then when the internet became in, of course they played on the internet. But I mean, what they would do is they would broadcast the. Okay, and Spassky plays pawn king four. Oh well, let's analyze that. We've been analyzing that move for 600 years, and they would. And then I'm not just talking about the Fischer-Spassky match. You had a country that had there were 30 million boards out listening to the moves. Replicating the moves to see what was happening in the game. They were actually broadcast the chess game in the Soviet Union. And, so much of it is culture. We look at games, even soccer. I mean, I've been to a professional soccer game before, and the most exciting thing about it was the shootout. That was really, really exciting. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you got to wait 4 hours of ball kind of going back and to get to that shootout. Some people say that about hockey even, but at least hockey, you've got great plays up and down the ice, and even when they don't work, they come back the other way. Soccer, it takes so long, unless they just boot the ball, to get from one end to the other. There's not enough scoring. So it never really caught on here. And the field is so what? The one change I would make if I wanted to adapt soccer to be more popular in the U.S. is instead of 100 by 50, I would make it 100 by 30. Make it not so, not, but because it's so wide, the European and South American players are so fast. They've got so much area to work with. You know, what is the big thing in football? Okay. What do they say about a great receiver? You have to give him space.
Right.
Within which to move. You got to get him the ball. Okay, and you got to get it to them, as they say these days, in space. All right, in a soccer field, there's too much space. You make that the size of a football field. You bring it from 50 yards wide down to, what is a football, 33 yards, right? Mm-hmm. 100 by 33. That will change the game dramatically. And you would have much more scoring and much more two-way play.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that, because people refer to soccer as the beautiful game or the perfect game or the wonderful game.
And some people say Hillary Clinton's a good politician too, Bill.
Let's not go there. You know. But the interesting thing will be to see if all the kids who are now playing hockey will become real hockey fans of professional hockey as they get older.
Because I think the kids who play
a fairly recent phenomena.
Once you've taken a slap shot, you never forget that, and you always watch the professionals and how they shoot, and you remember your attempted slap shot.
Well, I certainly
remember something also about hockey.
Hockey definitely. I think hockey has become much more popular because so many kids are playing.
Exactly.
And colleges are now playing. High school teams now play. They have minor league hockey. So,
well, I think it's also indicative of how many Americans and college players are now in the NHL.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen a real explosion here in hockey. But, you know, hockey is an expensive sport for your child to play. Between the equipment, you're spending about $1,200 plus you break sticks.
It's ice time that's expensive. And having the rinks. Down south, you don't exactly have a hockey rink on every lot.
Although, I have to tell you, I have clients whose kids are playing traveling baseball. That's not cheap.
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
It wouldn't be
nice
time.
You're right.
But, you know, these people.
Well, because
are
you have
going
to go places and stay overnight.
They stay
it's
for the overnight. Weekend.
It's the room and food and travel expense.
And frankly, the kids that are good, at least in this area, are getting private lessons.
Oh, sure. They're going to the Jack Cuss Junior Baseball Academy.
Right.
And so, you know, back in the Midwest, you picked up a ball and a bat, and, you know, you were lucky to buy two balls a year and play, you know, scratch baseball.
Right. And you had maybe two or three bats with a couple of different sites, and that was it. Some kids used to bring their own bat.
Oh, we all brought our own. Well, we didn't have organized baseball when I was a kid, so.
No, when we went to the park, I used to bring my own bat all the time. I had a Joe Foy, third baseman Joe Foy bat.
I had a Duke Snider.
That was a big bat.
Did Joe Adcock have a bat?
So who?
Joe Adcock.
Oh, he absolutely
In his day, he was a great player.
He was a great player. I'm wondering if I had a Joe Adcock bat.
Yeah.
I may have.
Wasn't he on that 54 Cleveland team?
No, he was on the Braves.
No, the Braves. He was
on
the Braves.
But didn't he go to Cleveland?
World Championship team.
No, not.
I thought Adcock went to Cleveland at the end of his career.
Before he was a Brave, he was an Indian. But
that's what the before he was a Brave.
Then he went because he played in Milwaukee in 57.
He played first base for the Braves, if I remember correctly.
He would?
He was a first baseman?
Yeah.
And I will tell you that there was a Joe Adcock Louisville Slugger because one of my cousins.
Well, that was my bat, guys.
How about that?
I wish I still had it.
I was going to say.
Oh, everybody's mother's got rid of all that good stuff.
Them and the baseball cards.
Oh, don't even go there with the baseball cards.
I know now.
I can still remember
the gum
in the early 60s. Yeah, the gum. And I would save the gum because my mother wouldn't let me have too much gum. And I used to have once. And then one day in the middle of the summer, I had like a shoebox full of gum. And I went to eat a piece one day and it was hard as a rock. I bit in it and it broke into 1,000 pieces. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, no. The bubble gum that was much better was a little square bubble gum.
Oh, Bazooka. Bazooka. Yeah. Joe Bazooka.
But they didn't have...
Bazooka Joe. And there were funnies and there were comics inside. The wrapper was comics.
But they didn't have the baseball card. So we all bought the gum that tastes like cardboard just to get the baseball cards.
That's right.
But I still remember, and it was probably 6 or 8 years old, opening a baseball pack and rolling on the floor laughing and showing my mother this card and saying, look at the name of this guy. Who would name their kid Peter Rose? The guy's name is Rose. It was Rose's rookie card.
Oh, my goodness.
A valuable card.
And I can still remember getting Mickey Mantle's card, and it was pink. That year, the Yankees were pink. I think it was 66, and of course, we all know where the Yankees finished in 66. And throwing that card away. And even that card, I mean,
Why would you throw a card away?
What's that again?
Why would you throw a card away?
Well, because I threw all the Yankee cards away.
The Yankees.
I remember having a Tom Tresh card.
Tom Tresh was
rookie of the year.
Didn't you trade them?
Oh, yeah, we did.
And you felt so good when you negotiated a really good trade.
I had a complete set of Yankee cards that I kept. I had another set of Yankee cards that I would trade.
Like
if I wanted Johnny Bench or if I wanted Luis Aparicio.
You might have to give a couple extra cards to get those guys.
I might have had to give him an extra Tresh and Tony Kubek.
There you go.
Luis Aparicio. But I remember getting I had the trifecta one day off my friend. I got a Warren Spahn.
Oh, boy. He played for the Braves.
Yeah.
I got
a Lou Burdett.
Oh, Braves.
I saw a Lou Burdett pitch.
For the Los Angeles Angels.
In 1966 at Fenway Park.
And I got a Jim 66? Bunning.
They brought him in relief. The Angels were losing like 10-1 at Fenway. Yastrzemski, Scott, and Canigliaro all had homered, and it was like 10-1. And they brought in Lou Burdett to mop up. Yeah, it was right near the end. It was probably one of his last appearances.
Probably like a September game.
Yeah, it was the end of the year.
But he was still playing.
He was still pitching. Yeah. Yep.
After he played with the Braves, because he played with the Braves in Milwaukee.
This was at the end of his career.
But he started as a Boston Brave,
I think. All of the Braves did. They moved from Boston to Milwaukee. and then they moved from Milwaukee to Atlanta.
And, you know, I was always surprised when they moved from Milwaukee to
so
Atlanta.
So was I.
Milwaukee was such a baseball town.
Oh, it was the beer and the whole thing.
That's why when they got the Brewers, which today, do you think you could get that name in today?
The Brewers.
You think you'd get that name by today?
Why not?
I don't think you would.
In a city like Milwaukee?
I don't think the baseball commissioner would.
I mean, the other would be the Milwaukee Harleys.
That MAD would be after that. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. They would, all of those AA, that all those groups would all be opposing.
Well, I mean, so your problem is...
Well, guess what are you brewing?
You would not get past a team like the Colorado Pot Smokers.
Exactly.
talking about ending on a high note.
Very good.
We better...
Pat, you're showing your age there.
We better play a couple more commercials and then say goodbye.
Okay.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Hunterton Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterton Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterton County.
Hunterton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.